Today's show is brought to you by The Star City Murders, an amazing new film coming to video on demand, Apple TV, Amazon Prime Video, many other platforms on April 16th. That's right, The Star City Murders, produced and starring our very own Heath Sentazzo, a.k.a. Heath Solo. After three murders are committed in Star City, Detective Frank Brody and his team must stop a serial killer before he strikes again. However, the connection between the three victims could hit close to home. It's a race against time as Detective Brody has less than 48 hours before the suspect kills again. Starring our very own Heath Sentazzo, Michelle Lukes, Amy Mata, Jason Graham, and Tim Russ. Directed by Giles Andrews. Baby, this is it. We've been talking about it for years. It's the Star City Murders. So go over to Apple TV, iTunes, Amazon, look up Star City Murders, or just click the link in the show notes and pre-order it now. Welcome back, everyone, to Daily DVR. We got a great show for you today. Before we get into it, just want to remind you to go to dvrpodcast.com. And you can also email us at dvrpodcast@gmail.com and become a patron. Support the show. Heath and I just finished doing True Detective Night Country. It brought in a lot of new patrons, too. Want to say thank you to them, a lot of new listeners. But head over to patreon.com/DVR. Today, we're talking some reality with Amy from Little Miss Recap, an amazing podcast that I started listening to when I was on the hunt for a Married at First Sight podcast. Listeners of this podcast will remember that myself and Peter, and of course Gina and Jenny, we've covered some reality here and there. And back in the day, Peter and I were going to maybe cover MAFS, Married at First Sight, that is. He's in Australia, but that didn't work out. But in that kind of research phase, I found Little Miss Recap and Amy and her whole crew. So, Amy, welcome to the show. Thanks for coming on and chatting about weird people on television with me.
Hi, thank you very much. Okay, I have to ask you something first.
Yes.
Am I supposed to be recording anything on my side?
No, I got it all. I'm the producer.
Real professional over here. Real professional. No,
I got it all. Yep. I actually,
thank you
I
so much for.
Oh, I was just going to say, I record. I'm so old school. I have a board and I record on a separate digital recorder. Yeah, I don't even record in the computer. So.
Oh, wow. You're fancy. Yeah, you're fancy. Yeah, I'm just like, you know, two iPhones and an iPad. No, I'm just kidding.
Two iPhones and a microphone.
Thank you for having me. I really appreciate it. I've been listening. I listened to Winterfell when you did it. Huge Game of Thrones fan. So I'm really excited to be here and talk a little bit of everything.
Yeah. Yeah. Thank you. Yeah. We had a little chat before and I was happy to find that out. And why don't you tell us, give yourself a plug. How do we find right off the bat? I always forget to do this and I do it at the end of the show. So tell us all about you, how to find you, your website, what shows you cover, anything you want people to know.
Okay, so the podcast is Little Miss Recap, and I'm a writer, and I started this podcast. I'm a writer, and I'm also a lady of a certain age, and I was like, I'm going to start looking at shows through the lens of a Gen Xer and, you know, a feminist lens, of course, but also as a writer. So my original intent was to do a lot of scripted programming, but then I've always been a huge Sister Wives fan, so I started covering Sister Wives, and everybody went nuts over it. So I started doing more reality. So we do right now we're doing Seeking Sister Wife. I don't know if you've ever seen that. That's crazy.
I've seen every single episode.
Mm-hmm. Garrick Merrifield never fails to disappoint us in every way. Oh, Lord. And then we're covering Married at First Sight. We're going to be covering Love During Lockup, which is the next installment of that coming out. Mm-hmm. And we've done scripted stuff on our Patreon. We do cult documentaries and Yellow Jackets and stuff like that. So we're really into like smart documentaries, but also documentaries that are ridiculous, like Mother God and Twin Flame and stuff like that. And that's what we do. And we're at Little Miss Recap. You can look at littlemissrecap.com or just find us anywhere you listen to podcasts.
Well, I love listening to your show. And I love listening to you talk all about this ridiculous stuff. And I try to bring our, as we were talking about before, I try to bring a lot of our crew who was a lot of True Detective, Mindhunter.
Mindhunter was so good.
Yes. So we were one of the few shows to cover all the Mindhunter episodes, and we did it more from, less from the serial killer perspective and more from like the TV, you're watching a TV show production perspective.
Sure. Yep.
And I think that came off very well. Of course, Game of Thrones, Lost. Then we did like Mayor of Kingstown, a lot of kind of like a little bit macho kind of darker detective. We're thinking about covering this new show, Sugar, with Colin Farrell. That's going to be on Apple. It's kind of like a LA noir with a little tinge of surreal, supernatural, a little bit like True Detective, I think.
I love True Detective. It's so good.
Well, let's start off with that. I asked you to come on the show. I said, hey, let's talk about some reality. And you said, actually, I really liked True Detective. It's been a while. The show ended, what, about a month ago, I think, 3 weeks, a month ago?
Yeah, I was to it late, though, because I'm one of these people, like, I wait for it to bunch up and then binge it. Like, I can't do the week to week. So I binged it, I think, like, maybe 2 weeks ago. So I'm fresh on it. I'm fresh on it. And I have to say, like, as a writer, what a beautiful example of setting his character, right?
Oh, definitely.
It was amazing. Like, you just, I don't know. I became obsessed with the town. I want to go there. I want to see it. Of course, the Ennis isn't real, but it's based on a real place.
Well, you want to go see there and be there. But do you really? Because it's kind of freaky. You know, all your past things that you couldn't put away are going to come back and get you in the night. Do you really want that? That's the question.
I know. And you know what I feel like they did really well in this season? So I did watch True Detective. I think I've seen them all. But of course, the first one was the best with McConaughey and what's his name? Who was in it? Woody Harrelson.
Yep.
And I love that supernatural element. And I feel like they really came back into that in this.
Yeah.
And I just loved it. I think it made it so, it was so round and full, and it was really, really well done.
Well, I'm glad to hear that. Yes, we totally enjoyed it. I mean, there were those out there, of course. The He-Man Woman Haters Club was very excited by this show. They couldn't wait to get on that X or Twitter or whatever and talk about their Bitcoin and also
Are you talking about the manosphere? Would you say this ignited the manosphere?
Yes, that's it. Yeah, I love that when you use that word for it. Yes, it did. They got very into it. Oh, my. They were upset, right? But I mean, past that ridiculousness, it was a great series of television that came from a singular vision. And it's always when a creator can create, write, and then direct too all the episodes of a television series, that's a rarity. And when someone can do that, that it usually turns out well. I mean, it's not, I think the history of film is maybe a little different. You have a lot of overindulgent filmmakers, you know, but I think in television, because it takes more people over a longer period of time, the commitment level, you have to have more of a sustainable level of commitment. And I think that that really showed through in True Detective, because it was just, we really loved it. I don't even know if I liked, I mean, I guess I liked season one better because it's the original. It's hard to separate.
Sure. It was different. But, you know, it was something that was really different when it came out. And so of course we'll always have a soft spot for the one that broke the genre. Right. But I also liked, you know, I'm a big fan of, as a writer myself, I'm a big fan of not everything has to be tied up with a nice little bow.
Definitely.
And I feel like there were some storylines that you were like, okay, we never got a definitive answer on that, but like, it's okay. It's been inferred and it doesn't really matter.
Yeah.
So I thought that was really interesting too.
Oh, I love that. I mean, you know, I'm an old school film nerd dude. So like just having watched the Oscars last night, you know, I was cheering for Anatomy of a Fall and Zone of Interest. Those were, I mean, I don't know if you got a chance to see Zone of Interest. But
no, Axel, I'm too busy watching trash like Couple to Drop Off.
Well, I see, I have been late at night. I've been catching up. I'm a night guy. So after my wife and my son go to bed,
I
stay up late and I usually, you know, turn off the lights and watch something that my wife will not watch, because we watch all the reality and all the big shows together. And that's when I tuned into I got to see all of the Oscar pictures this year. And Zone of Interest is the kind of film that begins with like a 3.5 minute take where the camera doesn't move. It's just like a photo, you know?
Oh, wow.
And all the motion happens within the frame. And it does that consistently throughout the film. And that to
That's
me,
pretty cool.
Yeah, I love that kind of stuff. So I like that this True Detective brought a little bit of that, you know. The cinematographer this year was the person who shot, who shot Tar. Have you seen Tar? The film Tar? Okay. Mm-mm. Again, a very slow, like the motion happens within the frame instead of moving the camera, right? Like these days you move the camera. If you know, it's like Michael Bay style. If you want to show something, you move the camera. You don't have people move in and out of the frame. And I'm old. I like that. So yeah, this was just a fantastic season of television. And Issa Lopez, who they're going to bring her back for next season. But
Are they bringing her back?
Yeah, they're bringing her back for next season.
That's a good decision. Yep.
But none of the actor, it's a whole new story. So she's going to.
Which I love that as well. I love that because I'm a big fan of the self-contained seasons. I just like that.
Yeah, like the old BBC shows. So when they do like we're one and done or we're two, maybe two.
Yep.
Not keep on milking it on and on. And
that's one thing I have to say about, you know, the BBC shows, even now, like the good murder shows, they know when to end. Yeah. They really do. Yep. Two or three seasons, they're done.
Yep. You got to just get out while they get, it's like a Costanza, right? I'm out, Jerry.
Yeah.
You do,
I'm out.
You do the joke, you leave, right? Always leave them wanting more. That's the thing. When I was growing up, that would be, and having grown up in New York and New Jersey and around a lot of Jewish people and learning, like my comedy was like Borscht Belt shit. My stepfather was Jewish. So that kind of early like thing where always leave them wanting more was like the mantra, right? That's not a thing anymore in America. Like I was thinking about that with the death of Richard Lewis, and I was watching Curb, and I was like, we're losing a generation of comedians and funny people, and they're being replaced by like people who are on Joe Rogan or something who think comedy is like this political type of app. Like everyone has to be Lenny Bruce or something. And none of them are funny. Like Dave Chappelle used to be so funny, and now he's just like this right-wing weirdo.
Dave Chappelle was great in his time.
Yeah.
Yeah, I don't know what happened there.
It's like because there's a percentage of that manosphere, isn't there, Amy, that looks at these comedians as heroes instead of people. Oh, they're supposed to make me laugh? Wait a second.
Axel, the manosphere is always watching. They're always around. They're always watching.
Oh, I'm getting scared.
I truly believe. I don't know if you watch Sister Wives. I mean, we're
yes, I do watch Sister Wives too.
Yeah, we're not covering it anymore because of the passing of Garrison Brown, which was tragic. But I truly believe that's what happened to Cody Brown. I feel like he was pulled in by the manosphere.
I don't really get that show. I didn't understand. I'm glad we're talking about it because I've never actually had the opportunity to talk about Sister Wives with anyone. My wife.
Oh, I've watched it from the beginning. Okay. I've watched it from the beginning.
And as have I. I've dipped in and out. Some of when they do now, because it's what is Sister Wives on again? TLC? Okay. And they always love to do it's like with the 90-day stuff where all of a sudden there's like episodes of people just watching or they sit and they talk. Like when they do the Sister Wives kind of a reunion, instead of a reunion, they sit down one-on-one with
each of- So this is new. So what they used to do back in the old days is they would all sit down together and have, you know, on the couch with Sukanya Krishna or whomever.
Yeah, like a regular reunion.
Yep. Tamara Hall did one at one point, I remember. Oh. But now, since they all can't stand each other, they have, you know, they come out one by one. And then this year was the first year that they did those talk back and look back specials, which were wild, where they looked back and they filmed them reacting to early seasons. And it was really interesting. And we really enjoyed covering it. But, you know, I have a newsletter and I just wrote about it today, like the passing of Garrison Brown. I don't know if you know what happened there with Cody's son.
Yeah, that, but I believe, from what I understand, he committed suicide, right?
Yeah, he died by suicide. Yeah. And, you know, we have reason to believe that it was several factors. I mean, you never have a why, right? Ever. That's the tragedy of this kind of thing. Yeah. But
and the purpose many times, right? Many people.
Right, sure.
And that's yep. That's why suicide's so hard, because you hear so many people say it's a selfish act. Well, I mean, obviously it is. It's your life, right? It's mm-hmm. It becomes so complicated. But I want to hear your take on this. I'm sorry.
No, that's okay. But I just feel like we have to think about what is the implicit contract that we make with these families when we watch them, right? So, like, what were we getting out of watching Cody fight with his, like, he was. Season 18 was rough, and he was literally on camera talking shit about his kids.
Yeah,
and it was bad, and they were airing it out. Yep. Yeah. And so you're like, I don't know, it just changes how you watch the show. And I'm like, as a parent, I have two 17-year-old daughters. Okay. I can't go back and make fun of that anymore. So I just needed to get away from it. And just, you know, I'm of the mind. And it's interesting because I don't think, you know, so we just started doing the rewatch on our Patreon. We did all of season one, and that's where it's going to end. But when I watched it, one of the things I talked about several times with my co-host was, I can't believe how much these kids are on camera and how young they are. And I think that in 2010, we didn't think of it quite the same way that we do now. And I think several things have happened, but one of them is that we've had this cultural conversation around consent and agency, right? In the last like 5 or 6 years.
Yeah.
Another thing is we've seen a lot of things come out like about like the Duggar documentary, and we've learned about like Jill Duggar not getting paid and being exploited. And, you know, none of the Brown kids were paid for their time on the show. So like, I think it's just different now. And I'm kind of like, I don't know if I could watch shows where kids are front and center.
That
like the adults, you know, they have their own agency. They make up their own mind. And if they have a kid and, you know, it's a harmless scene or something, that's fine. But like, I'm thinking specifically of John and Kate Plus Eight and mm-hmm. Sister, like these
little
kids
people,
are front and
Big
center.
World, which is a, I love that show. The Little Johnstons, Dance Moms.
Yep.
All these shows that really do benefit from, hey, you know, there's an old saying, there's three things you don't want to work with in TV and film: water, kids, and animals. But
there you go.
These things also, the reason they say that is because these three things were such a draw. Right? They draw people, they bring people in, and especially kids and animals. Water was like a back in the day thing. I don't know why. There was a lot more movie. I guess it was because
Of Waterworld?
You don't know, but that's like an inside joke at our friend Glenn loves Waterworld. Okay. So people listen, our listeners will love that. But, what was I going to say? I was thinking of the pie. I don't know. For some reason, when film first started, I guess it was a different, you know, it was only 100 years ago, as someone reminded on the Academy Awards last night. And I constantly have to, people have to be reminded that our whole culture is new, right? Our whole television, film, everything we as Americans talk about is even newer than 100 years.
Sure.
And like you're saying, it's a great point. That, I mean, it's like kids and cell phones. My son is 11 years old. He has a little Apple Watch. He will be getting a cell phone when he gets keys to his first car, and he's like, he is not going to be on Instagram. He is not going, like, I think now we know what this stuff can do to kids. And then when you put that and a reality show and you're being filmed and the way something my wife is like a huge, she could start a club against kids that are performative. Like she hates performative children. Like if one of my son's friends is like, "Hi, I'm Jody." She's like, "This kid's got a fucking YouTube channel or something. This kid is too perform," right? Like everybody's performative, but you make a great point. And with Sister Wives and a show and shows like that, and hey, we see it now on Instagram where people put their whole lives on there. It's like their own little TV show.
Well, and part of that is, I don't know do you have one child?
My son is 11.
Okay. So I think you're probably at this point now, but I think there's a point because I mean, and I don't mean to sound preachy. I put a shitload of pictures of my kids on Instagram and stuff when they were little. They were born in 2006. Again, it felt like a different time.
Yeah.
But I think there's this moment when you're a parent, when you're like, oh shit, these are people. Like they're not just things, right? Mm-hmm. Like they have feelings and thoughts and emotions. And I remember very clearly hitting that point when suddenly, like, I didn't feel right putting stuff on Instagram about them unless they gave me permission to do it. And I want to say they were probably like 8, 9, and 10 maybe. And you now I'm it. Like, yeah, so I don't think, I think as parents, and we all fall victim to it, like, they're just these things that we're taking care of and loving, but and then they become people one day and it's like, oh, you're actually a person. Okay.
No, you hit it just recently. My son, and here I even feel weird talking about it on a pod, but we talked about it on our football pod because we do a football podcast that I don't think anybody listens to, but we have a ton of fun doing it because we love football. And, my son has kind of become a part of it because this year he's started liking football for the first time. And he also had a little, maybe a little girlfriend kind of, you know, like some girl he was talking to. And having him grown up on Facebook or whatever, and since I've been a stay-at-home dad, obviously I'm more on, you know, you have more time, right? You're communicating with people or getting recipes or whatever.
Yeah.
And I was going to put a little pose. Like I took like a picture of him, like he was going on a first kind of little date. And then I was like, I can't do this. I can't. Right. It's his story to tell, not mine anymore.
Yeah.
Right. Like at some point, him being a little baby and stuff was my journey. I'm a dad doing it.
Yes.
But then you're right. They get their own agency. And reality TV is very similar. And I have the same opinion as you, which is I shouldn't say no, but I have very little sympathy for an adult who chooses to go on a reality television program, even if they don't know that there's going to be sleep deprivation, lack of communication. They could have their phones taken away. They food and being plied with alcohol, having producers in their ear guide them and push them and act like their friend when really their point is to get a better performance out of them. If they don't understand these things and they come onto a television show, I kind of feel like, you know what? That's like it's a bit your fault if you couldn't even just research that on the internet.
Quick Google search.
Yes, it doesn't take much. Pitfalls of reality TV. Okay, there you'll have it. But when you're a child, I totally agree with you. And, you know, I just found out that Zach and Tori from Little People, Big World are ending their participation in the show, and they've become half of that show because all the other kids left because they didn't want to be on it. Well, I think the Jeremy kid left because they didn't want him on it because he's a crazy right-wing conspiracy theorist now.
Oh,
I don't know if you knew that. Okay. Yeah.
No.
That's the older kid who is average size.
Yeah.
And he and his wife, they all live near me. Actually, my son and I were one day going to take a trip to the Roloff farm, but Everything that's happened has kind of soured me on it, but I agree with you. And I think your decision is a tough one to, so you're not going to cover the show anymore.
We're not going to continue our rewatch. I think that I'm leaving the rewatch season one up on my Patreon. And also we did all of season 18 because I believe I'm proud of our coverage. I think we cover it very carefully and responsibly. We never, ever, ever come for the kids. Like, they're just off limits to us.
Yeah.
So I don't have anything to necessarily be upset with or unhappy with that I've said. However, there would be no, like, part of the fun, part of my shtick is that I hate Cody Brown so much and I come for him all the time.
What a weird dude.
Oh, my heart just would not be in it. You know what I mean? Like, I just couldn't look back on season two and especially seeing Garrison Little, and I couldn't do it. So I'm just, and a lot of my listeners feel the same way. They're like, yeah, this isn't fun anymore. So I'm not saying that I'll never do it again, but for right now, no.
Well, you know, for me, and we talked a little bit, you're not a Bravo head. I'm a huge Bravo fan. one of the things is that Bravo pretends, unlike TLC. Now, TLC with your 90-day fiancés, your after the 90-day
Axel, before, excuse me, it is the Learning Channel. Please call it what it's supposed to be.
The funniest thing is one of my friends, Derek, who has a very popular podcast called Conspirituality, and everyone should listen to it. It's fantastic. But he used to, when we used to live together back in Jersey City in the early 2000s, it was the late 90s, and he worked at Discovery Channel. And, and at the time, he didn't even fucking watch television. He would ask me, like, what the fuck is the Discovery Channel? It's like, well, they have this thing called the Learning. It's a whole network. They have this science channel, and it's actually could be pretty cool. And then little did you know that now, of course, with cable and streaming, these networks, it's like MTV only plays ridiculousness.
Right.
Like, it's an entire network of that skater guy who, Rob, what's his name? Rob Drydeck, right? I used to watch his show, Robin Big.
I know who you're talking about. Yep.
They have it's just ridiculous what has happened. Yeah, but the Learning Channel. But they don't pretend as much to care. I mean, they have a bit more of a hands-off approach when it comes to everything, children, international mores and standards. Women understanding that in Muslim countries you cannot make out on the street and then being that's like 90 Day Fiance. My wife and I have watched and on many seasons.
I've watched every season of it.
Okay. I don't know how you can get for the last season we watched I think 3 episodes. Then we had to take a break because, of course, the episodes are also like 3 hours long, right?
They're ridiculous. It's ridiculous.
It's so much.
You want to know what? This is going to be a little bit of a downer. So I'm going to bring the podcast down real quick. That's okay. And then I'll try to bring it back up. So what happened to me is in 2018, I started working on a book with school shooting survivors. So I was like collecting their stories. So I was sitting and talking with like Parkland parents, and because Parkland had just happened, it happened while we were writing the book, and Sandy Hook and Columbine. And I was just really in like heavy stuff during the day. So at night I would come home and I would just put on TLC and like I would watch 90 Day Fiancé, and that's when I got into it. And then I discovered like a bunch of podcasts around it, and then I went back and watched all the seasons, then I watched all the spinoffs. Like, it was almost like for self-protection I had to just cocoon in the ridiculousness. And it, so I have a soft spot for it because I feel like when reality TV is at its best, that's what it can do for us, right? It can provide a respite from the nightmare of the world, like we're all heading into again with this stupid election.
Yeah.
So like, that's a place where you can just be like, you know what? Nothing matters. Who cares if, you know, Nikki and this guy hook up or whatever, like there's low stakes. It's fun. Like you said, you can't think about it too hard. Yes. You know what I mean? Just whatever.
Well, it's the modern day sitcom. And I think
that's when it's at its best.
That's what I say, because we talk about so much TV, and on our show, we'll cover, you know, the range of, like, if we're talking Emmys or whatever. And I've never, there's so many sitcoms. I've never watched The Office.
Oh my God. I've watched The Office like 15 times.
I just stopped. I
live in Scranton, Pennsylvania. So
there you go. I think I stopped. Like, I think Seinfeld was literally the last sitcom I watched. Mine too, back in the day. And then I switched on to my reality journey. Is really founded in a love of documentary film and being a film student and loving like the Maisels brothers and the Up series and all this kind of stuff. And like really on, there was the original reality show was a PBS show. I always forget the name of it, but it was about a family where the mother ends up leaving the father, and it was the first reality show that was ever done, and it was I should look it up. Wait,
leave it to PBS first to bring the laughs to reality, right?
Yeah, well, because it was a takeoff of An American Family, a 1973 documentary series on PBS, which I watched all of, the Loud family, and. They were in Santa Barbara, California, and they followed them for 7 months. And this is a precursor to the Up series, which is one of my favorite, and it probably is the greatest documentary series ever done, following kids every 7 years for their entire lives. They're now on like Up 63 or something.
Yeah.
Yep. Even though the filmmaker died. But, so when reality when The Real World and all this kind of stuff.
The Real World. Yeah, the first Real World was unbelievable.
And that was in New York too. So like here I am across the bridge in Jersey and they're doing The Real World. So I just formed a love for it. And then I fell off on like sitcoms and comedy series in general. And then I realized that's filling that void. So I know exactly where you're coming from. And that's why I think I connected to your podcast.
Yeah.
Because I think you have the same attitude that I often have, which is you're watching these shows really for the ridiculousness of it. It's funny. It's like you get to spy into another person's life. You get to be catty. I sit there with my wife and all we do is say like, that guy is so much hotter than that guy. No, oh, wait a second. What is she wearing? You know what I'm saying? Like, we just pick apart everyone and have fun. And when the reality, though, intercedes, like in this case, you do have to kind of pull away from it, you know? So it's happened to me certain shows where I couldn't. I binged all of Shaws of Sunset, and by the end of that show, I know you're not a Bravo. One day you will be, because Bravo is amazing. But by the end of that series, I like had to pull away. I was like forcing myself to finish it because the people were so awful that it was kind of like sometimes it can affect you. You know, 90 days, sometimes the people are really... like. Did you watch the 90 day, the one when they were in the hotel? What was that called?
It was with
Ed and what's her name.
The Last Resort. Yes, yeah, we covered it.
Okay, I did listen to you cover that then. So much reality. But that show, when they start involving the couples that have kids, I always feel way differently than the couples that don't.
Okay.
Do you feel the same way? Like what was her name? Kehlani?
Kehlani, and she brought her kids with her.
That was disturbing to me, and they were showing them fighting with the kids in front, and that was at points my wife and I were like, I can't watch that.
Yep. Can I pause for 1 second?
Sure.
Okay.
All right, and we're back, and your house didn't burn down. It was just...
Sorry about that.
Yeah, this is live. We're doing it. This is for the people. This is a reality podcast.
I'll do it live.
So we're talking about Kehlani and their children.
Yeah, Kehlani and Asuelu.
Asuelu, Asuelu, I love that name. Who is like a 30-year-old child, that man.
He really is.
Never seen anything like it.
their kids, Kennedy and I forget the other kid, but they're on TV a lot. And I don't know, sometimes I'm uncomfortable with that, but I think that she has, from what I understand, separated from him. And so I don't think we'll see her again, hopefully. But I loved Kalani. And it was, Last Resort was great because there was a therapist on site. And it was really interesting just to see. Now, yeah. I hope it doesn't get all trashy again and devolve into something else, which I'm sure it will.
But. Yeah, that's what I was going to say. I'm sorry, I didn't mean to interrupt. But
no, it's fine.
Excuse me. When you said there was a therapist, this is the level I'm talking about with TLC too. And I don't, if this is anyone's beliefs or anything, I'm not trying to make fun, but it is not normal to say, here is our therapist. And then for the therapist to introduce past life regression. That's not.
Oh yeah. The one therapist was doing that. Yeah. Yep. Yep.
That was a little like my wife and I started laughing and we're like, this is definitely TLC. Yeah. Like that's only on TLC do they say.
And then Ed was like he was saying that he was a leprechaun in a past life. I'm like, come on, Ed. I hate him anyway, but.
Yeah. Oh my God, that guy is so weird. Yeah. But I couldn't figure out whether he was a leprechaun or he was like a jester in the king's court and they had him dress as a leprechaun.
I couldn't decide. I couldn't make that out either.
It was very interesting, that whole show, but I agree with
you. Well,
it was
very interesting that even in his past lives, he made himself a victim.
Yes, that's true, right?
Yeah.
He was the Tyrion. He was the Tyrion.
100%. Yep.
And I'm sure that's where that woman got that, too. She probably had just watched Game of Thrones. There's, I know you don't watch The Traitors, but...
I'm a little familiar with it. I saw a couple episodes. I love Alan Cumming's, love the job he does as the host.
The Traitors.
The Traitors. Yeah,
he's so
good. I did not watch like all of the season, but we're thinking about covering it. Mm. I don't know. I mean, of course I'm late to the party, as everybody knows me.
It's kind of blown up, so that's a tough one. Mm-hmm. I think there's a lot of people aren't doing a separate pod on it. There's a lot of popular like the Ringer reality. I know Juliet, when they're talking about The Bachelor, they'll talk about the Traitors at the end of the episode. So they're not, they're still kind of talking about it. It's a great show. Okay. It's very fun. It kind of has a fatal, I don't know if you are a competition reality fan, like The Challenge, Survivor, any of that kind of stuff?
I love Survivor and The Amazing Race.
Okay. So in Survivor, you have two types of challenges. You have a challenge where they are attempting to gain either group or singular immunity. Mm-hmm. So the challenge has a meaning. They get a prize challenge, right? Like where they get to eat food with each other or they get fishing equipment or fire. So, within the challenges themselves, the interplay can affect who they vote off, right? Like, they're not helping us out a lot. We can vote them off, even if they're a pain in the ass, right? Or they're strategic and we think they're going to win. So that Survivor is the ultimate. I love Survivor. I've seen every season.
I do too.
I can't remember anything about it. I'm not one of those people who could be like, remember?
No, me either. I worked for a CBS affiliate for a long time. So we were all into Survivor in a big way.
Did you get a buff or anything like that? Did they give you that?
Yeah, I think I did. I think I did get that kind of stuff. Yeah. And you know what's awesome? One of the biggest perks I tell everybody is they sent me to the Emmys one year, but it was the daytime Emmys. Nice. And I'm a huge soap opera fan.
Oh, that's awesome.
So I got to go to the soap opera Emmys, as I call it. And that was a lot of fun for like a 22-year-old at the time
Are you kidding?
A huge loser into a bunch of soap operas.
Mm-hmm. Oh, yeah. Well, I did. I came up watching All My Children. My mom was into it. And then I would VHS it and watch it after school.
Yep.
At some point I fell off, I think sometime during high school, but my sister and I used to watch some soaps too. So I'm familiar.
It's so funny because for so many people, like I just started on my Patreon doing once a month, I'm going to recount like a famous soap opera storyline because, you know, my audience is primarily female. And for many women, at least, that is one of the primary ways that we connected with our mothers and grandmothers is through their stories,
you know,
Gen X female relations. And I think it just brings back so many nice memories. But my husband, who's also my age, so we're 47, he also is like, oh my God, I would watch my mother's stories with her all the time. Yeah. Like even, I think there is even that crossover where men also have been included in it. Yeah. And, it's such a nice warm memory for many kids.
You're talking about Gen X. You're talking about a generation of men with daddy issues, right?
Yep.
Whose daddies worked, or they said, I don't need to, I'm supporting the family. I don't need to talk to the kids. Right? That's what I do. Still the kind of the change out of that where you have like I think a lot of our generation, when I talk to my friends, we're like, you know, maybe we're too much about being a great dad or something, right? You have like I'm a super girl dad, you know, like that kind of thing.
Yeah, that kind of weirds me out, but
let me tell you, I have a boy, so I can't comment on it, mm-hmm. but it's funny, I have a couple of friends, guys who have like three girls, like they are like all, they're surrounded by women and mm-hmm. They do it well. They're not like the mm-hmm. I'm super girl dad guys, but yeah, that does skeeve me out a little bit.
It does. It's kind of like,
I don't know.
My husband is, you know, obviously a girl dad. Yeah. We have our twin daughters and he's all like, the first question he gets asked all the time is, oh, do you have a gun? Oh, do you have, you know what I mean? Like, and he's like, I'm not going to murder people who come to try to date my daughters. Like, they're perfectly capable of handling themselves. That weird, it's ridiculous. Right.
They're trying to.
Yeah, he gets that all the time.
Interesting. Mm-hmm. But what I was talking about with the traitors, okay?
Oh, sorry. Yeah, go ahead.
We got back. I can't believe I remembered. The challenges that they do have very little meaning to the show. So the traitor and the faithful are trying to vote out and seek who is killing us every night.
Yeah.
That's what they're doing. They go to sleep, they wake up, someone's been eliminated. But they mm-hmm. don't give the traitors anything to do during the challenge. So they're both united in wanting to win the challenge because that pot that they're, you know, they'll win $20,000 for completing this challenge. And it mm-hmm. goes into the overall pot at the end of the season that will mm-hmm. either be won by the traitors or the faithful. So it makes them work together on the challenge, mm-hmm. which takes any drama out of it. You don't give a shit.
Yeah,
so I fall asleep. I love the show. But every time they go to a challenge, my wife and I talk about it. I think we watched two episodes of The Traitors Australia last night.
Yeah.
And I got about 35 to 40 minutes of good power nap in. And it mm-hmm. was all dirt. And then I woke up when the challenge was over, because I'm an old man. And then she would be like, I'd be like, what happened, honey? Way. And then mm-hmm. she'd be like, they had a challenge. So
you dozed off.
I hope they change this. I mean, as mm-hmm. we know, reality shows, one of the cool parts about it is their willingness to change. Cast members, formats.
Well, unless you're Married at First Sight. Married at First Sight isn't changing for anyone.
Well, I you know what? I'll disagree a little bit with you.
Okay.
And let's go right into Married at First Sight because you cover it. I love it. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. I'm a huge fan. I've seen every season. I've also seen many seasons of UK and Australia as well.
I have not seen any other version. Everyone keeps telling me I need to, that Australia is much better. But I have not seen it.
You know, my boy Peter, who I know is going to be listening to this. How you doing, Peter, from down under there?
Pete, you're wrong on this.
No, I think he might. He might.
Just kidding.
The thing about it is, already Married at First Sight is a television commitment. It is literally like we moved into a new house last May, and I think mm-hmm. they're still on the same season.
Yeah, it's ridiculous. And that was part of my hesitation in the beginning to cover it. I'm like, it is a 6-month mm-hmm. commitment. Minimum.
It's a lot. It's a lot.
And there's a lot of filler and you but know, Australia's those first couple worse. Seasons were not that long. Oh, I know, yeah. Because Australia's a couple times a week, right?
That's what I'm trying to say is that the Australian one is more campy, it's more dramatic. They the couples fuck each other, like they'll cheat on each other, they'll show it. They get into fights with the family members. It's any type of drama that you can think of that could come out of a relationship. They pack it into that show, but it's so many episodes and there's so many couples. And what they did this year for the first time ever on Married at First Sight US was to add a couple later. And that was only because it didn't work out with, what was his name? Michael, isn't that?
Michael. Okay.
Michael, right?
So, yeah.
They do that every season on UK and Australia. So they just,
really?
Yeah. And you'll just tune in to like episode 8 and they'll be like, and here's a new couple. And you'll be like, what the fuck? We're 8 episodes in. They're already on the honeymoon. And they'll be like,
yes, as we call him, Castor Pal. As Castor Pal reminded us, this was a first in Married at First Sight history. Oh, God. Michael was left at the altar. Yeah.
Yeah. And my wife was saying to me, why aren't they showing or using her real voice or her face or anything? And my response is they don't want to give her the publicity because they don't want people doing this. So they took
that
her face
be.
Out of
were
it.
Speculating maybe she was suing them, but I think you're right.
No.
Your theory sounds better.
Hell, are you kidding me? These companies are, they have lawyers up the wazoo. There is no fucking way that she could have enough money or enough power to sue her face off of already signing a contract and filming for weeks. She filmed getting the dress. She filmed when she tried out for the show. They cut her out of like 4 episodes because on Max they do the pre-show, they do the
right, and there's the bachelorette party, and supposedly there's a scene where you could see her.
Yes, then they had to cut her out of. That's like Love is Blind editing where they cut whole couples out of things.
Well, it's the same company.
Season. Yeah,
and
it is.
They're just as bad. I mean, this editing, it's awful. Like I called it out several times this year where they were clearly dubbing in a voice.
Yeah.
And making a narrative that wasn't there. And that's what drives me crazy is the deceptive narration, the unreliable narrator. I can't stand it.
A Franken edit, as it's known.
Yeah. Franken edit. Yeah. Yep.
So, and I, you know, having been an editor and I was never, so I actually shot a couple of reality shows that never made it to air. I was hired as a cameraman. I was hired for one, which was, I feel, oh gosh, this was such a tough shoot where I was actually hired for a group of female models who were doing a reality show in New York. And I probably fell in love with each one of them while I was shooting it. And I was like, oh my God. But it was, that was a fun one. That was before I met my wife. So I did like 10 days on that or something and they never sold it. One of the girls did become a pretty big model and I've seen her around on things. She had her head shaved. And she became a pretty big model somewhere, but I've never really worked on any of these shows, but you can see the manipulation that takes place.
Yeah.
You can see through both, and it is the same company. You're right. 90 Day and watch, and I mean, looking at Love is Blind and Maths and seeing the way they edit for people. And the situations that they lean into on Maths that they don't lean into on Love is Blind to their detriment, I think. I think Love is Blind is so sanitized that it makes
it's
me
so
yearn
sanitized.
For Maths.
Like I know you covered it. I listened to your last episode when you guys were talking, and you know, like I was just thinking to myself the other day, we have Johnny and Amy, who are the couple that, you know, spoiler alert, if you guys haven't seen it, they're the couple who make it, right?
Yep.
We know nothing about them. Nothing at all. I couldn't tell you anything about them. Why does he love her? Why does she love him? I don't know. Nothing. I don't know.
Nope.
It's wild.
It is wild.
They just lean into this drama all the time.
Yeah.
And I guess, you know, you have to have that, of course. But there's also part of us, like our better angels, who would like to see maybe some people really connecting. And wouldn't that be great? Like when we think about Lauren and Cameron or Brett and Tiffany, you know what I mean? Like the couples that have really made it, their stories were interesting too. And I feel like they're forgetting that.
Yeah, that's true. And I think I wonder sometimes where, what feedback they're listening to, right? Is it the internet? Do they do focus groups? Is it just
internal? They're not listening to me, Axel. I can tell you that.
I know. And I'll tell you one thing. They're not listening to anybody about Love is Blind is fucking firing Nick and Vanessa Lachey because they are awful.
I know.
And I'm not even looking forward. It's Monday we're recording. I think it's Wednesday the reunion comes out. And they're not going to put anybody on the spot. They're not going to get any good answers from anybody.
No, not at all. Not at all.
But
you need like a Tamara Hall to get in there and really straighten shit out. Like Sean Robinson won't do it either. Sean Robinson will be like, oh, well, we're going to have to leave that here. But
Maths is good. Don't you like him?
Yeah, but I just feel like, I don't know. There's a lot like, okay, for example, we have Keisha Knight Pulliam who hosts the after party.
Yeah, I'm not a huge fan of hers.
Not a huge fan of hers either, but she does kind of come for these people. And I don't know if you've been watching After Party, but it's been like
a
shit show this season.
Because I can't, yeah.
I'm Emily's sorry. Like real charged up and she's just coming for everybody. And she got into like a little tiff with Keisha Knight Pulliam. It's wild.
Really?
Yeah. This whole season. Did you see Decision Day? Did you see last week?
Yes. We are.
Okay.
Totally,
so you saw the shootout at the OK Corral afterwards.
But this is the problem. We switched because of NFL Sunday Ticket. Mm. We switched from DirecTV to YouTube TV. And YouTube TV does not have Lifetime. So we are watching Maths on the Lifetime app through our Fire Stick with commercials, but they don't unlock the
after party.
The after party. So we can't watch
that. Last week there was no after party, so you didn't miss anything because the real show last week was what happened after Decision
Day.
Oh, that
was awesome. I know. That was one of the best scenes ever in Maths history. And that's why in our original discussion, I can't believe I remembered it again, about it not changing. I do think that they are allowing it to change that way. I like the way they're allowing. They are allowing the participants to speak more openly, to break down the fourth wall more. And I enjoy that. I like when they talk about he acts like this on camera, but not on camera.
Yeah, this is brand new.
This on social media.
This is brand new. This is brand new. You're right.
That's good stuff.
And if this stuff can stay, then that's great. But there's part of me that is like, did they have a choice? I mean, they really didn't have anything to film because they had to keep Michael going. So I don't know. Although they could have edited Michael's timeline in, right? I guess.
I mean,
I don't know.
They could have made it seem like his second marriage took place the day after everyone else got married.
True.
They can do anything they want, you know, through editing and through the clips and separating sound from audio. They can achieve all that kind of stuff. So I think it's been a little weird. You're right that they kind of have to keep his story going. But if you remember, they have done this in the past where it used to just end with the last decision. Mm-hmm. Then they did a special where they did a couple of episodes following the couples. I think it was back in the day with like Jeff D or something.
Yes. Shanice and Jeff D.
Yeah. Yep. Then they incorporated that into the actual last episode and then included another episode, which is what they're doing, I think, next. Because the next episode is called Climbing Down from Decision Day.
I know. I know. So, and there's like six more coming, by the way.
Oh, Michael has never fucking ends.
Michael has reached out to us on Instagram and I've been chatting with him and hopefully we're going to interview him after the season ends. But he was like, buckle in, girl. It's not ending till April. I'm like, okay. All right.
Wow. Well, you know, we once interviewed someone from MAFS.
Oh, who was it?
Oh, gosh. Who was it? It was that. I can't even remember. I have to look on my own. I was doing a bachelor show with a woman named Sarah for a couple of years, and her friend was friends with, what was the guy's name? He was a really quiet guy. He came off actually rather well. Oh man, I'm gonna have to look it up. I can't even, it was so many years ago, but I heard your interview with the dude from Seeking Sister Wives.
Sidian? I love Sidian. Sidian.
Who you are, I think you maybe have a little flame for. As you've admitted.
100%. 100%.
You think he's a hottie. I just kept on wondering. I was listening to that episode and I was like, I hope he gives away like where he lives, because I live... And I used to live closer to Portland. Now I live a little outside of Portland.
Yeah, he's 100% outside of Portland. I forget where he told me. He did tell me.
But in the beginning, when they were shooting, I think they lived closer to Portland. And they were in a park. In one of the first episodes they were introduced, they were in this park. And I could swear that that park was near, I lived in this town, Milwaukee, I think was near that or southeast Portland.
I love him. He's so freaking weird and I'm here for it.
They definitely had the most, that show was a lot of fun. I've seen all the episodes and they definitely had the most, like, I never questioned that that his wife was into what they were doing, where in every other time I did.
Yes. There's, I mean, it's still a misogynistic practice, right? But there's,
depending on how you do it, right?
Like, right. It doesn't feel manosphere-y when Sidian's doing
No, no.
And it doesn't feel like Garrick Merrifield.
And I mean, hey, living out here and also in the podcast and the creative world, you meet people with all types of relationships.
Yep, 100%. And
even though typically you do think of it in the kind of Mormon terms of sister wife, like that's the way, I guess, in America we think about it. I mean,
well, it's a system that's been used to oppress women. Yes, that's how
exactly.
I think of it.
And, and we often don't think. Sometimes I just think of the state of Utah and I'm like, what the fuck? Like they control an entire state. It's so like a cult controls an entire state. And we're just all walking around going to the Sundance Film Festival. It's very strange. But the situations that I have known is when the wife is bisexual, wants to be with a woman, right? And then the guy is kind of like...
They're definitly poly, right?
Yes. They're poly. So it's a different situation where when it comes from the wife. Now, there's one other situation that they've just introduced where they claim that in the new season, right? Where the woman said... I'm looking for, and then there's some, it looks like there might be some friction happening.
Is it Shane and Ashley?
The younger couple.
They're in Massachusetts, right?
I think so, yeah. Who met Art throwing
axes. Yep. I agree with you. I just think like, so getting on to Couple to Thruple, this is one of the things I love so much about Couple to Thruple. Like it was just everybody was out there and just being what they were and non-apologetic. And it was refreshing to see people embracing like sexuality as a spectrum and all sorts of different lifestyles. And it felt truer to what goes on in this country than what we think happens. Because my kids see stuff like that. They don't bat an eye. You know, they're like, that's people we go to school with. And I think that the co-host that I had that helped me cover it, Amanda, she has only been married like 2 years. So she's been in the dating world pretty recently. And she was telling, you know, she had all the terms. She told me what everything meant because I've been married 17 years. So she was like, here's what this means, here's what that means. Yeah. She did a great explainer up front and, you know, talked about like what aspects of this they're doing wrong and what they're doing, you know, what's icky, what's not. And it was just really, it was really fun to cover and really fun to watch. And I wish Matt Sharp, who does Seeking Sister Wife, who does 90 Day, would just lean into, because he did Seeking Brother Husband, where they pretended to be.
I watched that too.
Yeah. Like, just lean into, we're polyamorous. Like, come up with a polyamorous show. We want to see that.
Well,
like, I don't know why he has to couch it under polygamy all the time.
Yeah. Well, because I think that's a selling point, because you have it. It kind of encompasses other genres that they can sell to, right? Other target demos that they can sell to and segments than something like this. But I think that there is a place for a show like this, as we're seeing, because we both watched this show, right?
I loved it. It was, I had so much fun covering that show. We were calling it Hot Dummies on an Island. And there's a whole genre of that, right? Like, there's Perfect Match and there's Temptation Island. And it's just like, it's low stakes. These people know what they signed up for. Nobody's dragging a kid along. Nobody's,
they're in bathing suits 90% of the time.
It's just, it's fun. It's,
there's
like,
cameras in the bathrooms. You know, that's like a big deal. Like, you notice that in like, on a lot of the Bravo shows, like, their cameras don't go certain places. Like, they act as if there's, and on, I think on a show, on these shows, and have you watched Temptation Island with Marky, the other Marky Mark?
Of course I have. Okay. Of course I have. I interviewed him. When I was on Pink Shade with Mary Payne, we interviewed Mark. I think it's Mark L. Wahlberg.
Yes.
It?
Okay. I have to go back and listen to that because
he's amazing. He's amazing.
He is fantastic. He is such an emotional, empathetic.
You know, he started a podcast. It's called Bonfire Talks.
Okay. I'm going to have to, I don't know. I dropped out of my wife was not as into that show as I was. And then some reason when we switched, maybe I don't remember. There's so many TV shows there. I mean, we've already talked about like 50 reality shows, right? That I kind of fell off it, but I was touting him for getting an Emmy for like reality host. And he really, and the thing with me is I am a huge Antiques Roadshow fan. So I have
And he used to host that.
Yes. Yep. I have been watching that show since I used to watch the British version when I was a kid. I love Antiques Roadshow. So when he started hosting this show and kind of started his new journey, I was so shocked and surprised to find out. And this was at the same time that The Bachelor was kind of really muddled in a lot of bullshit. And my wife and I really liked The Bachelor. It was one of the first shows we watched together as a couple. And we kind of, I was really attracted to that show. And like, he was like, oh my God, he was amazing. And this guy, Scott Evans from Couple to Thruple, reminded me of him in that way of kind of like a non-combative host. Like a lot of reality hosts, like your, going back to the originals, like Jeff Probst is combative to the, like he's challenging them, right? He's not,
it's
really,
an adversarial relationship.
Yes,
almost.
Even though he always likes to talk about, we're a family and this is what Survivor is. In the end, he's going to remind them, you're here to win.
In the end, I will break
you. Yes, and we're going to, this is so important. Where this guy is more like, hey, this is your journey. Like, if it includes leaving the show, that's cool with us. Like, he even will bring things, like, that's what Mark does, Mark Wahlberg. He'll say that on that show, right? He'll be like, maybe it's your time to leave. Whereas like on Maths, they're like, don't get divorced, stay together.
Okay. So that brings me back to the Maths conversation. So two of the things that they've changed or not changed that I think need to go either way is the experts. They need to change the experts. I like Dr. Pepper. Pastor Cal, I have a lot of problems with. He's a misogynist. I can't take him.
I think they both have to go. And I agree with you. Yeah.
They need to go.
I like the sexologists though.
Dr. Pia.
Yeah, she's good. But then they lost their. Do you remember the scandal,
Dr. Viviana? Oh
no!
Oh, Dr. Jessica.
When she married the guy who was a contestant on the show. Yeah.
Oh, what was his name?
I think it was like Paul or something. I can see his face. He has like a.
I want to say he was in Chicago, and I want to say there was some fight that him and his girlfriend had, and he recorded it.
Yep.
and he was sure playing it for Dr. Jessica.
And she got so upset. If you go back and watch that, you will know she was already in love with that dude.
100%. But another thing I think they changed that needs to go back is this idea of this communal living. I think that's a problem. I liked to see when they had to choose somebody's house to live in. We got to see them go over budgets. We got to know what, like, I can't even tell you what any of these people do for a living now.
Yeah.
Because I don't even know. I don't even know what their financial situations are.
Yeah, that's something.
And I think it creates this like group mentality, right? Where all the women are like banding and all the men are banding together. And it's like, I don't know. I think it has changed the show and not for the better.
I'm glad you brought this up because listening to your podcast, when you talk, you've talked about this a bunch I don't know how to feel about it because in one respect, I agree with you that like, I remember back in the day when the firemen and the, and that, remember the first season, the New York season or whatever, with that dude was training to be a fire. And then you're right, they had to talk about whose apartment they're going to live in.
Yeah.
They had to make real life decisions. And you felt like you knew them. But on the other hand, having watched the UK and the Australia, where they, I think the idea of putting them in the same place came from because they were doing it before that. You do get some fun. I have to admit, I do like it when they cheat on each other with other people.
Well, they're not doing that here. Like, if they were doing that, Axel, I'd be into it. But that's
There was a hint of that though when they were like, "Let's double date," you know, when he was like, "Hey, let's go on a date together."
Yeah.
What a weird couple.
I don't know. What were their names?
Cam and Claire. Okay. So I know we're all over the place. This has been such a fun podcast, by the way. But
sorry guys, that's my brain.
I love it. I'm riding it. But I have to ask you about them, which is, don't you think, now he said that she said she wasn't attracted to him in the last episode, right? That's one of the things he wasn't allowed to say on camera.
Yeah, I don't have my little sound effect, but I usually do it when I say, okay, so on After Party, okay, after one of the first episodes, Lauren said, I think it was Lauren, it might have been Emily, I can't remember. Let's say it was Lauren for argument's sake. Lauren goes, oh, Claire's pissed off because Cam said he wouldn't beep in her beep and her beep was too big.
Oh my God.
And we were all like, what?
Who said that? Emily?
So supposedly Cam said something to Claire that we did not see on camera, of course, about her body and her not being slender, which he did bring up on decision day.
Right, but we never saw that. Yeah, that's interesting.
Right, we never saw it. Right. And then Emily said, oh, and he also said he wouldn't beep in her beep. And we don't know what those beeps are.
Oh, my. Well, we could fill them in.
I could fill them in 17 varieties, but I don't know which one is the truth. So, like, I don't know what happened with those two. There's this idea of like everybody is, and I have been making an argument for a long time that we need middle-aged maths and middle-aged Love is Blind, because when a 50-year-old woman twice divorced shows up on these shows, she's not gonna be there for bullshit, you know what I mean? Like,
well,
she's
they
be
do
hit.
That in Australia and UK, they mix in older couples, then. They mix in older couples.
Look at the difference with Michael and Chloe, and they're only 38 and 39. And they're acting like they're the parents of these kids.
Yeah, but you know what? It doesn't always work. I'll tell you that, because it depends. Mm-hmm. There's many dramatic older people hey, here we are talking about the drama. But see, I thought that confused me, because when I was watching the show, I thought that they actually in the beginning both liked each other. And if they had admitted that.
I thought so too.
Yeah, okay. So I wasn't the only one. I just wanted to clear that up, because it seemed to me that they both said, I find them attractive. And then when they felt hurt, they were too similar. They both pulled away and were afraid to admit it and wouldn't put it out there. And he, like Kevin, I did get to see, how did I see this? Was it on a clip, or maybe they Oh, maybe they opened up this episode. They opened up the mid-season one.
Yeah, they didn't have an episode. Yes. They had like a mid-season special. Yes. Yeah.
And they let us see that one. They let us see that one on the app. And I remember Kevin saying, if this guy just never shot his shot, and if he had shot his shot early, they would have gotten along. I'm not so sure. Maybe. I'm not sure. I still think they're nuts. But I also think, how about this? If they had switched Brennan and what's his name, Cam, with Emily and the other girl, the
Claire.
If they had switched them, I think it might have worked. Think about it.
Emily was tough for me. I mean, I like her, but she was like, like that vocal fry was a lot.
And when he was telling her that she was negative, he wasn't wrong about that. I'm sorry.
I have said two things can be true, right? She's not a bad person, but she does shit talk everybody.
That's her generation, like you're saying. Yeah. She's like brought up on like YouTube or something where everything is dissing someone. You know, it's like an ESPN show or something where it's like, that's the worst person ever. But you don't really mean it. That's just how you act. It's
right, and that affectation doesn't make Brennan any better because Brennan was awful.
He's the opposite. You know that dude sitting at home trading crypto, listening to Joe Rogan with an Elon Musk poster behind him. You know,
100%, 100%.
And he also collects sneakers. You know,
Sneaker culture. Yep.
Come on. I mean, that's his thing. And he's watching MMA, and he's like, my life is set. Okay.
Yep. Yeah,
he's got a high-end game system.
He was so inauthentic; like he was just an idiot. But they took Emily, who, I mean, for all intents and purposes, to me, she felt like she was 19 years old, but I guess she was in her mid-20s, and she's never had a relationship before. No. And they're going to put her on Married at First Sight. Like, who casted that?
I think
Who cast that?
Well, they actually did a good job, right? Because I think that's the point with, there is a little bit of a difference with Maths and Love is Blind in the casting, which is, I think in Love is Blind, they really do want people to get together.
Yeah.
And in Married at First Sight, they have no intention of these motherfuckers staying together. They just want the drama. They want them to argue. I think they purposefully, when they find good math, think about some of the best matches in Maths history got the least amount of screen time.
Yeah. And think about, they do things like this all the time. They purposefully match people that don't, like Becca and Austin, different religious beliefs. Sounds like that should have been addressed.
What was up with that dude?
When they were in Houston, don't forget Brett and Ryan. Do you remember that
situation? God.
And Ryan was like real conservative.
Yeah.
And Brett was like a super liberal.
Yeah.
And why would you put them together? I mean, maybe 15 years ago you could have done that, but not in this day and age.
Yeah. No, well, that's like a Pastor Cal thing. Pastor Cal is one of those people who'd be like, you can have political differences and be together. It's like, no, Pastor Cal, you can't.
Unless you don't care about politics. Exactly. Some people don't care. Fine, that's whatever. True. But Brett cared.
Or people are willfully ignorant.
Well, Pastor Cal also puts up videos on his Instagram of like rolling his eyes and like women be shopping when his wife wants to go to the store. So, you know, he's leaning into that kind of stuff. Pastor
Cal. I can't believe we're even talking about this guy. He cracks me up, but I love Maths. I will continue watching forever.
Yep. Me too.
I don't think there's any successes. The only success out of this season is that, what's his name? Michael got basically, I mean, talk about hitting the jackpot here. I can't even remember her name. What's her name again? Who Michael?
Chloe.
Okay. That name always, I never know whether it's Chloe or Chloe.
Yeah, it's Chloe.
Okay. Chloe, I mean, just in general in life, that always confuses me. But she is obviously on like 15 Xanax an hour. She's like, hi, I'm having a good time. Oh my God, this is interesting.
Wait till you see this week's episode. Okay. It's a little, you know,
She, I cannot. Well, wait, have you seen, do you see the episodes ahead of time?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I do.
Okay. You're lucky.
But I literally cannot say anything.
Okay.
But yeah, I do.
No, don't. Yes, don't. Yeah. Please don't. But she is, for me at least, and my wife knows this, I mean, I think she is probably the most gorgeous woman that has ever been on this show. And she
yeah,
is,
she's beautiful. And she's kind and she's
yes,
sweet.
And she's very much my type too, because she's kind of high strung and controlling.
Yeah.
And, I hope my wife doesn't hear that part. But she, I mean,
I love
she's
how
powerful.
Sexual, like sex yes. positive she is too.
Oh
she's
my
like, oh
God.
Yeah, I need a vibrator right under my pillow.
Are
yeah,
you
I
kidding
to
me? Yeah, she's a, yep. but also.
Yeah, she's fun.
Completely unprepared to be on this television program and should have never signed up
yes.
for it.
Yes. Yeah.
So,
and I want to be very clear. I only see the coming week's episode a few days ahead of time.
Okay.
I don't know anything beyond that. Okay. So I just saw this week's and yeah, she's something.
She is really something. And that dude, Michael is,
I love Michael.
He's very interesting out there, mm-hmm. dude. Are they a good couple? Do I think they're a good couple? Not at all. Do I think that they should stay together? Not at all. Do I like them
both? I think
both?
She's
yes.
too. I think she's too conservative for him,
oh.
and I don't mean politically.
No, yeah,
I just mean like
yes.
she's too. Like I love his weirdness.
There's
and
nothing
I
wrong
been
with that,
100%
right? She wants
to that, right.
She wants a lumberjack or something.
Yeah,
and he
yeah, yeah.
is, you know, like in Fame, or you know what I mean. He's
yeah,
dancing.
Yeah. And I am here for him.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Wait, he's also the same dude who was like, you know, I was around so many creative people and so many gay people that I decided to go on a date with a guy. Remember?
Yeah.
He said that
yeah.
in the first episode, right?
Yeah.
And I was like, okay, look.
I think so. Yeah.
These are like dudes I came up with. I've always hung out with like artists and different
Me
types
too.
Of people. So that I'm like, okay, I know that dude, but I also know her. Mm-hmm. And though sometimes the paths can meet, probably not on Married at First Sight.
Right.
Like this is not right. the incubator for a successful union right. of human beings right. together.
Right.
All right. We have yep. talked about a bunch of stuff. I've kept you, I feel like, way too long.
I feel like we could go for 3 more hours.
I do. You've got to come back. I'd love to come on any of your shows and talk about these crazy people.
Absolutely.
It's a fun world, and I've really enjoyed chatting with you, and I've enjoyed listening to your pod. So is there anything else? If you want to talk about anything else, I can. It's up to you, but I think we have gone a long time.
I think we've said it all.
Okay. All right.
We've said it all.
All right. Mm-hmm. No Yellow Jackets. We'll have to save Yellow Jackets season 2 for another episode.
Oh, absolutely. Season 3 should be coming soon, right? Later in the fall, maybe? Or would it be 2025, probably?
I think later because of the strike and everything. But also,
yeah.
there is this rumor that we're supposed to get a one-off episode in between
yes,
seasons.
Yes, I saw that rumor. Mm-hmm.
So we'll see if that happens or
we'll
not.
See.
I'm not particularly sure.
We'll
Showtime
see.
Is not in the best shape. Paramount and all
right.
that. So... who knows
right.
it, you know, hopefully it'll
okay.
continue. But tell us again, Amy, where we can find you.
So you can find Little Miss Recap anywhere you listen to podcasts or go to littlemissrecap.com.
Awesome. All right. Well, thanks again. We will definitely talk again. Everybody go out
Absolutely.
There, subscribe to Little Miss Recap. Great shows that you talk about. Lots of fun. And this has been fun too. Check us out at dvrpodcast.com. Become a patron, patreon.com/DVR. I'm trying to think of what the next pod is. I think later this week, Heath and I are going to try to do a TV catch up, maybe talk a little Shogun, maybe talk a little Gentleman on Netflix, maybe talk some other stuff, maybe The Regime, which I wasn't a huge fan of, but we'll talk
I
about that.
I tried it and I didn't like it. Mm-hmm.
Just didn't hit me in the right way, you know?
I agree.
But
I
definitely
agree.
A lot of quality people put that show together. So,
yeah.
You know, it took me a while to get into Succession, too. So the dark comedy
yeah.
kind of thing
yeah.
can, but I just think this one might be a miss. But hey, that's mm-hmm. TV. There's 100 million other shows to watch. And we'll be talking about them. So thanks a lot, everybody. Peace out.